listening to the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello, on this week's episode, we continue with the series of Mythbusters taken from the 2013 Adequan USDF Annual Convention, in which Dr. Duncan Peters' presentation features topics such as how time off affects the fitness of your horse and shockwave therapy. But he begins this episode by talking about issues relating to the horse's back.
My horse never worked hard as a young horse. He can't have any back problems. Well, we've looked at that also. Some researchers looked at basically normal horses, normal riding horses that apparently didn't have any problems, and none had a history of back problems or lameness related to soreness in the back. And they looked at nuclear scintigraphy to evaluate sort of the metabolism through the bones of the back. So they didn't really look at the soft tissues there, but they were looking at, you know, sort of chronic metabolism associated with the bones along the back. And they also look at radiographs to look for evidence of osteoarthritis. So they were looking at possible structural and physiologic problems in these backs. So they looked at 33 of those horses, and 26 of them showed deviation from the so-called normal spinal parameters, either with inflammation or from an anatomical standpoint. There are probably a lot of us in here that have some anatomical changes in our back that may not be bothering us from a physiologic standpoint. We're not necessarily sore. There are others of us that certainly probably have some sore backs now and then and have some associated changes with that. But that's a pretty high percentage right there. A lot of so-called normal horses are going around, you know, with some abnormalities that certainly can affect what we ask them to do. And I think that's something just to be aware of. And it can be difficult to assess some of these because there are many factors associated with back pain. Now, all the other soft tissues around there, the supporting structures, what we're asking these horses to do, whether they're capable of doing it. But in a lot of cases, we get horses that may have already done something before we're asking them to do the job we want them to do. Very common in eventing. Does it take a horse that's been at the track and do some of that? Some of these horses that we use for dressage may have had a different job before. Some of these horses that are jumping certainly may have done something else. What had happened previously can certainly be a factor in terms of whether or not they have some changes there. Treatment of these things can be difficult. Anyone, as I said, this is sort of the new area for us as sport horse veterinarians and equine veterinarians to try to decipher out what's happening up in that axial skeleton. And it can be difficult in terms of that workup. It can be frustrating for owners because there's a lot of sort of black box type of stuff that has to be done to try to sort some of these out. Nuclear scintigraphy, ultrasounds, certain types of muscle testing, things like that can all get pretty expensive to deal with. And sometimes we have to use some treatments and try to decipher whether or not those treatments are effective in terms of helping the problem. If they are, we call that diagnostic therapy. And in a lot of cases, we find that many of these horses, just like people, benefit from a lot of the adjunctive therapies or chiropractics or acupuncture that we may not know exactly why they benefit, but they get better, so we keep doing it to them. Some of the magnetic blankets, the pulse magnetic waves, therapeutic laser therapy, a number of these things. But we do know with back problems that a number of these things, that management can be very important, and a lot of these things are important to talk through with your veterinarian in terms of dealing with them. You know, it's interesting because we'll also find that with lameness in the lower legs sometimes too. Very commonly, I've blocked a horse and said, oh, I want to come back the next day. I've blocked out a lameness. I want to come back the next day and verify, in fact, that, something didn't just seem right or so on and so forth. And I'll come back the next day and that horse will actually be better. after we've worked it and actually we've blocked it. And I think that's sort of the same type of thing, is that you get rid of that pain, the body starts feeling better, starts moving better through the range of motion it should, and all of a sudden you don't have all those protective mechanisms, and it gets back to a so-called more normal state. And the other thing that works sort of in a similar fashion is shockwave. I use a lot of those adjunctive therapies for some of these things that are just low grade, you know, and maybe the horse is in a management system that doesn't allow that horse to be out and do some of the things that they'll do themselves. I think a lot of horses will chiropract themselves. You give them a chance to go out and play and lay down and roll and flip over. Can't do any better than that, you know, with chiropractors, I can tell you that. And, you know, they'll get caught under fences and things like that, straighten things out and adjust things, or they'll chase their buddy around the field at top speed as you're cringing over there in the corner and slide into the fence and spin around, and you say, you mean you can't do that pirouette? You know, when I'm on your back, a lot of these things, there may be some individual variation, just like in people. Some people may be more sensitive to the electrical stimuli. The other one is a MagnaPulse. If anyone's seen that, the Ring of Fire, it'll be, you know, it's getting to the dressage world a little more. I think there are benefits to some of them. Unfortunately, a lot of those things, we don't have a lot of good research on them. You know, they'll increase circulation, or they'll, you know, increase this biomarker to some degree, but we don't have a lot of great things on that. The other one is a vibrating plate. You know, actually, that stimulates the horse's own activity in terms of strengthening their core and everything else, and also relaxing them or getting them warmed up. We actually got force plates at MSU, and we've put horses 1 foot on different force plates, and we mapped out what a horse will do and how many adjustments they'll do. You know, it's something like 80 adjustments within a second. But that's like you and I, we're doing those too, as we're standing or moving. You know, the vibrating plates, you know, may have a little more of an effect there in terms of stimulating that. Looking again at the back, there are a couple of people. We have a physiotherapist that's a human physiotherapist. Initially, her training at MSU, and now involved, done a number of stuff. She works with the Australian Olympic teams, Narelle Stubbs, and she's part of our sports medicine team up there. And she's been involved with trying to look at, her aspect has been the back and the pelvic area, and looking at, she's looked at, I think, a total of like 179 horses or something, or looking at anatomical variations in that. And then we have another person up there that just finished her PhD from England, that the Newmarket group of veterinarians over there, Sue Dyson, and looked at the same type of thing involving the neck area, and tremendous variation in so-called horses that are not necessarily normal, but just horses that have been through some activity through their lifetime, just like we are, and they looked at primarily the anatomical changes in the neck and the pelvic region, and changes from stress fractures to developmental abnormalities where asymmetry associated with different vertebrae, missing vertebrae, cracked vertebrae, pelvic fractures, things like that that a lot of these horses had that were living with and doing a job. You know, what does it all mean? Oh, that's a big question. And there are probably a lot of our own horses that we ride that have a lot of different things going on, and they're probably dealing with it. One of the big things that Narelle talks about is there's no symmetrical horse out there. She has not seen a horse that's symmetrical. So if you want your horse to be symmetrical, it's not happening. So we've all got an excuse. I use that. Mine doesn't go to left. What'd I tell you? Yeah, he's not symmetrical. You know, there are a lot of things that we're probably dealing with that we're just sort of at the tip of the iceberg with. A lot of things to work on that'll take a lifetime.
In the next segment, Dr. Peters considers how time off affects a horse's fitness.
I want to give my horse some time off, but he always loses so much fitness while he gets some time off. So there was some work done in this area where they used Virginia Intermount College, looked at three groups of horses that have been in moderate workload, and they wanted to give them a little bit of time. So they took horses and put them in a pasture turnout, They took horses that were stalled but were exercised 1 to 2 hours a day riding. So that's the horse that, well, we're sort of at the end of the show season. We're going to back off for him and take it easy on him. I'm still going to ride him because I need something to go out and see him every day and do a little work with him. And then they put some in the stalls that just had access to a small paddock at night out of the end of their stall. These horses that were exercised also had access to that same paddock. It was a 14-week study, so they followed them over 3.5 months. That's a long time. Not many people give their horses 3.5 months off anymore. It used to be the norm. You know, you'd get into sort of the late fall, winter, you say, well, we'll see you in the spring, you know. But now with all the circuits and the warm weather circuits and everyone wanting to keep up and all the end-of-year points and anyone that's competitive wants to go for those, you almost have to go all year long. Also, the expense of keeping a horse. You know, who can say I'm just going to leave him boarded somewhere $450 a month and take it easy? They looked at these horses. They actually put GPSs on them, and they started with a standard exercise test. Took these horses, they were ridden, and they looked at a standard exercise test on them, and they did that at the beginning of the study, and then they did it at the end of the study. They did blood work, they did rectal temperatures on them while they were working, after they worked. They looked at body fat with the ultrasound. They looked at bone mineral density with x-rays. They did other blood work and body weight, and they did body condition scoring during this time when these horses had this time off. And the GPS was used to see really how much exercise horses were in fact getting. So one interesting thing with the GPS is the pasture horses traveled more, even more than the exercised horses. So these horses out in pasture, you know, we look over the fence, we watch them move around, and or we watch them with their heads down, and they're not doing too much, but they're walking from place to place. And actually, they covered more ground than taking those horses out and working them an hour or 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. So that's kind of interesting, because they're just moseying out there for the most part. But they also found that the bone mineral content actually increased in the pasture horses out there moving around, where the other two groups, they actually stayed the same or were tended to lose a little bit. The standard exercise test, the stalled horses increased their heart rate, and heart rate is a good indicator of how well you handle exercise. Right now, my heart rate would go up quite a bit if I'd even just walked up the stairs out there, because I'm not very fit right now. But, you know, as you get fitter, that same exercise load, your heart rate actually is decreased to do that. So they did the standard test at the beginning, standard test at the end. Well, after 14 weeks, there was an increase of 2/3. So if a horse started out with a heart rate of, in his first exercise standardized test, when he was in moderate work, his heart rate was 100. If they did that same test, it went up 63% or to 163 to do that same amount of work, meaning that he was working harder to do that same level of work. So during that, the heart rate went up. They also had higher rectal temperatures, and they had higher blood levels of lactate, which is a byproduct of muscle metabolism and an indicator of fitness. So the stalled horses, certainly, as you'd expect, if they're not doing much, would have that effect. But the pastured horses did not lose any fitness, and in some cases were actually better than the horses that were in stalls and exercise. So basically the bottom line was the pastured horses, you can go away for 14 weeks on vacation and have them in the pasture, and they come back and you can hop on them and go for the most part in terms of remembering some of that fitness level. And as we mentioned, they tended to have a greater bone mineral content. But the horses in stalls lost the fitness. But there are other studies that have been shown that it takes about 6 weeks of stall rest for a horse to lose about 10% of their fitness level. That's interesting, because if a horse has an injury, you know, we all are concerned that, oh, they're going to lose all this fitness. They're going to lose all this fitness if he gets 2 weeks off. When can I get back on him? Because I need to keep his fitness up, because he falls apart. Well, in fact, he doesn't fall apart. He looks like he falls apart, but he really doesn't. If you look at the standard exercise tests on these horses, they actually maintain their fitness pretty darn well. So if you have an injury and your vet says, you know, your horse is good to have 2 weeks off and take it easy for 2 weeks, and, you know, if you give him 3 weeks off or 4 weeks off, you really haven't lost anything, and they can come back pretty well.
In the final segment, Dr. Peters addresses the application of shockwave therapy.
So we're going to look a little bit at nerves, and this goes back to a little bit of what we were talking about, backs or other areas of the horse where we have some pain involved. It's very common therapy in performance horses, and it's become more common to the point where USEF is looking at rules of how to manage it, unfortunately, because it's ended up in a lot of barns in the hands of owners or trainers or grooms, and just routinely shockwaving horses without really knowing why or what they're doing. And, you know, they aren't inexpensive machines, but, you know, people can afford to get them, and they'll use them because they maybe saw benefit in one horse, or it was prescribed for one horse, so they figure it works for the others. And that's the unfortunate thing that a lot of people go with, you know, is what happens is it is good for one horse, it's got to be great for every other horse. We lose sight of the fact that the horse is an individual, and especially in medications. Unfortunately, I see where the trainer or the barn manager will go down through the line and give every horse a syringe, a 35cc syringe of something, which is absolutely ridiculous. There are not 35 of the same motorcycles sitting in those stalls. You know, we certainly have to get away from that mentality, but unfortunately the USEF, you know, gets involved in these things to try to look for at the welfare of the horse in that regard.
Visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education, to watch videos from these and other USDF events at usdf.org. The 2014 Adequan USDF Annual Convention will be held in Cambridge, Massachusetts from December 3rd through the 6th. This podcast is available on iTunes and at usdf.podbean.com. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.